You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, hey, everybody's titter over what's happening in the market, the potential for a recession, $100+ per barrel oil prices virtually guarantee a recession. Same with nat gas heading at $10 per MCF. All the energy economies run on energy, modern economies. And the higher the prices go, the more likely a recession is to occur. And this time will be no different than the last five recessions, of which three of them were triggered by high energy costs. And here to discuss what your choices are, especially when you're talking about investing, is Brandon Cobb, CEO at HBG Capital, a real estate investment consultant. Brandon, it's great to have you on the show. So why will real estate fare better in the coming recession than other asset classes?
Hey, Carrie, appreciate you having me on. It's an honor. You know, it depends on what real estate you're in. History doesn't repeat itself, but it does do a really good job of rhyming. You know, back in 2008, single family market got crushed a lot. Back in COVID, you had the commercial sector, especially, you know, office space, retail. It's got crushed a lot. Single family didn't get affected that much. So it all depends on where you get your bets placed. We see a unique opportunity in the market right now with affordable new construction products targeting first-time homebuyers. And really, the fundamentals are what's pointing at that. You know, you've got the most undersupply and highest demand real estate product in the country right now. And you know, not to be confused with Section 8 or, you know, government housing. I'm talking about like those first time families need somewhere to live. You know, your blue collar working class family, they need somewhere. They can't afford anything. So, you know, that particular asset class in real estate, I think, is going to have some insulation against whatever's going to happen. You know, the need to live doesn't ever go away. We just cut budgets and pinch pennies and transition into those more affordable living arrangements. So I definitely think your high-end homes, your custom homes are going to take a big hit, especially with interest rates going up, because your mortgage is going to go up a lot more. We've seen interest rates go up from, you know, 3.2% to roughly 5.2-5.3%. You know, on a first-time home buyer home, you know, that's roughly a, you know, 200-300 increase per month in your mortgage. You know, not a huge increase for that family, but for your higher priced homes, that's a much, much bigger hit. And you've got a smaller pool of buyers for that asset class. So I think it's going to be much more affected. You know, as for all the other types of real estate products out there, you know, historically, storage has done really well, right? In times of recessions, people always need somewhere to live and they want to put their stuff. And when you transition from to another, because you're trying to pinch pennies, you typically downsize. And when you downsize, what do you need? You need somewhere to put your stuff. And, you know, the storage units are pretty affordable for most people. So I like that asset class. Assisted living facilities, you've got 10,000 baby boomers retiring a day. I mean, that asset class in real estate is positioned for a phenomenal runway, I think, especially at the whole dynamic of that industry's changed. You know, it used to be like, oh, you know, I'm going to put mom and dad in a home. And it was something that was very, just wasn't looked at very in a lot of very positive light. But you've got these almost vacation style resorts now that have like chefs and really nice amenities, and it's an asset class where there's a big need, right?
So all right. When you talked me into it, I'm moving there tomorrow, because since I'm over 55, I'm ready for it. Especially if I get a chef, a decent chef, I'm in. But I know what you're saying. It's that certain asset classes are going to do better. If we're talking office space in Midtown Manhattan, not so much. Yeah. But if we're talking single family homes on the west coast of Florida, Lee County, it's a whole different ball of wax. What's your favorite? Obviously, real estate is regional always. And you know, there's hundreds of separate markets throughout the country. What's your favorite market right now?
There's so many good markets. I'm very bullish on Nashville, and there's a bunch of different reasons. And, you know, the reasons why I'm bullish on Nashville could be reasons why you're bullish, you know, on some other cities. But, you know, one, we look at affordability compared to the rest of the country, right? The median home sale price in Nashville is $383,000. That's still very affordable compared to the country. It's been one of the top 10 fastest growing cities in the United States in the past 6-7 years. We like that. There's no state income taxes. Businesses are moving here in droves because it puts more money in their pocket and it puts more money in the consumer's pocket. You know, there's a great migration from New York and California to Tennessee because we have very low, you know, taxes compared to those states. And our local governments are putting further local tax incentives in place for businesses to move here and create jobs, which is another reason why we like it. Also, COVID added a fourth dimension where we didn't shut everything down when COVID happened. You know, Florida and Tennessee were kind of famous for keeping everything open. And that's another reason why people continue to move their businesses here from these more highly regulated states. So, you know, some of the reasons why I'm really bullish on Nashville and I like Nashville, you know, can apply to other areas, but that's where we have our roots.
Okay. And that's fair enough because the more you know about your market that you specialize in, the better job you're going to do. But look, Brandon, we've seen record high appreciation in single family homes. Mm-hmm. I know there's no supply out there now. It's basically in any hot market, even in the Northeast. But when you have rates go this high, at some point, it's got to have an effect. What if their rates are at 7%? Do you think prices can keep going up? Rentals can keep going up? What do you think is going to be the outcome of this?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
You know, that's a great question. Honestly, nobody knows. If rates continue to go through the roof, the question you have to ask yourself is, can your target demographic still afford the product that you're building? That's the ultimate question at the end of the day, because it doesn't really matter what interest rates do, as long as people can still afford your product at the end of the day. Whatever the economic conditions are, if they can still afford to buy mortgage every single month, then you're going to be okay. And if the answer is they can't, then that's going to be a problem, right? That's why we stay away from the more expensive homes. We're not building, you know, $1 million, $2 million homes. You know, we're trying to stay and fight in that $350,000, $365,000 price point. Now we've done some transitioning where we're actually trying to build some smaller homes to kind of combat some of the affordability and combat some of the inflation we're seeing and the rising interest rates. We're trying to build affordable products. But to your point, that's a pretty big force, interest rate. And it's an interesting dynamic in the market right now because you have these huge forces that are pushing against each other. Interest rates are trying to bring prices down. You've got inflation, all this money printing that's bringing prices up. You've got the supply chain where you can't deliver a home in, you know, 4, 5, 6 months like you used to. It's taking longer. That's adding cost to it. That's the builder passing those costs on the consumer. And the fundamentals still indicate that we're in a crazy real estate market. I mean, homes are flying off the market still. A healthy market is 45 days, people. Your home should sit on the market for 45 days before you get it under contract or sell it. That we're nowhere near that, at least in Nashville and nationwide, I don't think. So the fundamentals are still there. Now, will interest rates be the nail in the coffin for, you know, real estate products? If you get some kind of hyperinflationary event, that could potentially have an issue, right? Super high interest rates. But that same hyperinflationary event is also a force that drives people into real estate because that's a safe haven for inflation. So the only thing that I can predict with certainty is we're going to have a lot of volatility, and you need to be positioned into assets that you have a lot of equity and historically have designed to be resistant to market contractions. And you want to be where the greatest demand is right now. And for us, we see a unique opportunity in affordable new homes.
All right. So what? How do you define affordable, by the way?
Yeah. So blue collar working class family, what can they afford? Right. When you've got a combined income of $80,000 to $100,000 a year, mom and pop together and kiddos, what does that look like? What can you afford? So, you know, typically, you know, 3 to 4 times what their income is. You really don't want to go over that. Now, people are buying homes, you know, 5, 6, 7 times their income. But again, when you have a contraction, that multiple goes down. So that's why we really like, you know, 400,000 and less. It's right where the median home sale price is in our area. And that's with not new products. That's with older home products. So if we can differentiate by having a new home that hits the market, that is, you know, 4 times the combined income of who our target demographic is, and we can get in and out of these products in, you know, 10 months or less with the construction and sale time, you know, we feel like that's going to give us a little bit of a barrier and some insulation in the event when there is a contraction in the economy.
Yeah, it's not if, it's when.
Right.
We put them off long enough and the chickens are coming home to roost now, Brandon. So as far as people being able to get mortgages, because anybody in that price range has to get a mortgage. Are they tightening up the standards there, the lending standards?
You know, I'm not seeing it. I definitely felt it when COVID hit. It was the panic, right? It was, you know, the lenders were all of a sudden looking at things a little bit more closely. They were wanting more of a down payment. They were wanting to see a little bit more equity in the deal, but I haven't seen that bounce back. Since we bounced back since, we're not having any problems with any of our buyers assuming or getting any mortgages. We are, you know, we're seeing great rates on construction loans from our construction lenders. Right. So I haven't felt anything. We still have a wait list of, God, probably 20% of our portfolio right now. There's a wait list. You know, people want to put it under contract before it's even built. We're not doing that because we found that doing that kind of cuts ourselves short. We're able to sell it for more once it actually does hit the market. So it's definitely interesting times. I'm excited to see what's going to happen this year if the Fed does continue to raise rates and see how that's going to affect our market.
Yeah, well, nobody knows what the Fed's going to do. Not even the Fed knows what the Fed's going to do now. It's uncharted territory. Hey, when you talk about returns, what kind of returns can you get on these homes if you're renting them out, turning them into rentals?
And to be honest with you, I don't know. Like, that's not something that we do. So what we do is we'll go in and when we find like a, you know, townhome development or something we're going to build, we'll bring in investment partners into that deal and we'll use the money as equity, get the construction loan, build the whole development. And as each home sells off, you know, investors get a return on their capital until they're completely out of the deal. Once we've paid them out, then our firm would profit on the remaining. But we sell everything. We're not doing as much build to rent stuff. I've heard that you can stabilize a build to rent community at around a 7 or 8 cap. Wall Street's buying it at like a 3 cap. So that's one of the reasons why the build to rent thing is so hot. I had like 6 hedge funds call me last quarter, which they've never called me before ever. And so I was scratching my head going, why are they calling me wanting to buy all of our stuff for this build to rent thing? I mean, it is just a huge, huge phenomenon. And I see why. I recently left a conference and we're talking about the build to rent space. And when I found out Wall Street was buying these communities at cap rates and not valuing it like a traditional single family home, I was like jumping up and down like, holy cow, that's the reason. You can build them at a 7 or 8 cap. And then sell them at a 3, which means one of the things that we're now doing is we're talking to some of these build to rent buyers, and we're probably going to end up selling them some of our neighborhoods because we can sell it to them for more money than we can sell it to a traditional home buyer and deal with one buyer as opposed to, you know, 30 or 40 different buyers in a community. So that's an interesting dynamic. And I think it's evolved because, again, nobody can afford anything. And if you can't afford anything, what do? You rent. And if you rent, what do you want? Do you want to live in an apartment complex? not if you're an older demographic, but you also don't want to own a home because you don't want to fix things up. So it's interesting. It's a new product type that's doing really, really well.
Right. So obviously from a builder standpoint, you make more. You don't have to engage in 50 different transactions. You got one hedge fund that just writes you a check for the project, and then you're on to the next. And really, that's what's happening. The up until the recent market insanity, which has to affect hedge fund profits, basically, you are seeing the institutional investor edge out the individual investor and the owner occupant. I guess that trend continues on. Hey, Brandon, let me ask you, we want to find out more about you, connect with you on the web. Where do we find you at?
Yeah. So if you're somebody who's interested in learning more about investing in recession resistant real estate designed to be insulated against whatever happens next in the economy, you can go to hbgcapital.net. That's Harry Bob Gary Capital.net. .com wasn't there. Guy wouldn't sell it to us. So I like to make a joke about that. But we've got a ton of educational resources on our website. You know, we've got a free ebook, Recession Resistant Passive Income, dives into everything that you need to know about recession resistant real estate. And then, you know, most importantly, I think that the biggest mistake people make when they're looking to get into passive investing is they don't know what questions to ask. That's really powerful. So we also wrote another ebook that's 100 questions passive investors should be asking before investing. So you can head on over to the website and grab all the free educational resources, no strings attached.
All right. That sounds great. I am going to get it myself for sure. Really appreciate you coming on. If you got a question for Brandon, just send me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. We'll shoot it off to him and get an answer. And the site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for a free newsletter. Again, if you got a question for Brandon, kl@carrylutz.com. Brandon, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Carrie. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.